actually everyone has many problems. And this fundamental problem of thinking I am this body, whereas actually I'm not this body at all. But everyone is in the same boat. They're reinforcing each other's illusion, and therefore they think it's okay. They think this is normal, to be in what is, in fact, a deluded, unfortunate condition, doomed, in fact, to failure. So, Krishna consciousness, Krishna is explaining here, we have to turn that conception around from everything for me and nothing for Krishna, but rather I just take from Krishna for me. We have to turn that round absolutely. Everything for Krishna and nothing for me, but rather from me to Krishna. And as far as my own position is concerned, well, I'll just leave that to Krishna. I'll let Krishna look after me. So, this is pure devotional service. And of course, we may not be, we are not on that platform, but we should try to cultivate that step by step, mold our lives gradually so that we come to this point, bit by bit at least, of dedicating our lives more and more to Krishna and gradually becoming more and more detached from the so-called normal selfish way. So Krishna says here, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away in charity, whatever austerity you perform, do this for me. So whatever you do, everyone is doing something. Generally, adults, of course, are working. So you can work for Krishna. What does that mean? That means that you use the income. If you can use the work itself to make things for Krishna or glorify Krishna, all the better. But at the very least, you can take the income from that work and use it as much as possible for Krishna consciousness. Instead of just buying all sorts of mundane things, buy things like clothing, household things, pictures, books. Buy things of this nature to do with Krishna. Instead of watching videos of the latest Rambo movies, or I don't know what the latest is really, what is it? Madhuri Dixit movies, is she still around? I've heard the name, I don't know who she is, but someone like that. Instead of buying videos like that, get some Krishna conscious videos. This is the basic idea. Yes. Instead of using your spare time to just laze around and waste your time, then use your spare time to chant Hare Krishna nicely, like this. This is the idea. Whatever you do, Krishna says, try and do it for me. Whatever you eat, that's relatively straightforward. Instead of just buying anything and everything, either in the shops, then you cook it, or in the restaurant, like this, just some food of some sort, then you understand how the process of eating is done in Krishna consciousness. You get nice vegetarian food, prepare it nicely, and offer it to Krishna. Then you can take it. And it's very nice. So through doing that, it is not that you will end up not eating. You'll eat very nicely, but it will be connected with Krishna. Whatever you offer or give away, Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, that everyone has the propensity to give something in charity. So, you give it to Krishna. Don't give it to the alcoholics in the street. You know, if you want to give them something, then buy some fruit or something and offer it, and then give that prasadam to them. That's okay. But don't just give them some money. Or even for that matter, even something like a materially worthwhile charity. Even that. Of course, it's better than giving to the tramps in the street who may use the money just to buy alcohol. But even some materially worthwhile charity is not as worthwhile as giving your money to Krishna and having it used in Krishna consciousness for the benefit of everyone in Krishna consciousness. Whatever austerities you perform, you have to get up early in the morning to go to work. It's not much fun. It's an austerity. So get up early in the morning for Krishna and chant Hare Krishna. So all these things, instead of doing them for yourself, try and do these things for Krishna. Gradually, you can mold your life like that. So gradually, you become more connected with Krishna in more aspects of your life, more strongly connected. And when we dedicate everything to Krishna, then we are really looking after ourselves. You might think, if I do everything for Krishna and nothing for me, then I'm going to end up with nothing. I'll just be lost. Empty-handed completely. But no, that is not the case. The example is given in Srimad Bhagavatam that devotional service to Krishna, trying to please Krishna, working for Krishna, is like watering the root of a tree. When you water the root of the tree, that water is distributed in the natural way, the proper way, to all the various parts and parcels of the tree, the fruits, flowers, leaves, twigs, and so on. You might think that if I want to really look after the fruit on this tree, I want to really help the fruit, I want to really help every leaf on this tree, then you might think, let me climb through the tree, just dropping a few drops of water on every leaf. Then I'm really helping the leaves. So of course that is a possible approach, but I think we all know very clearly that if you just water the root of the tree, you'll be helping the fruit, you'll be helping the leaves, and all the other parts of the tree in the best way, in the most natural way, in the easiest way. And actually to do it any other way is a bit stupid, really. In fact, it's extremely stupid. So similarly, we are parts and parcel of Krishna. We're inseparable. Mamayavangso jivaloke jivabhutana sanatana, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. So we are part and parcel of Krishna. So how are we going to be looked after in the best way? Is it by just making some effort to look after ourselves directly? Just as in the example of looking after every leaf independently? No, because we're part and parcel of Krishna. If we serve Krishna and please Krishna, then, just like the leaves and fruits and so on the tree are looked after in the most natural way by doing that, then we will be looked after also. Srila Prabhupada also gave the example of the day when the hand went on strike. I think you've heard about that. The hand decided, no more putting food in the mouth. What do I get out of it? I never get anything. I'm going to eat the food. So the hand went on strike, started trying to eat the food, and didn't put any in the mouth. But shortly, the hand was feeling very weak. After a few days, couldn't do anything. So then he started putting the food back in the mouth, and after a little while he was feeling fine again. It's a very simple principle. We are part and parcel. Just as the hand is an entity in its own right, to some extent, but it is also part of the greater entity, the body. And the welfare of the hand is dependent on the well-being of the entire body. If the entire body dies, the hand dies. So similarly, we are part and parcel of Krishna, and our well-being depends on whether Krishna is happy or not. So if we please Krishna, we will be pleased. And the practical example is the devotees who are doing that, living simple lives, not making any endeavor to make money, accumulate big house or big car or these types of things, just to serve Krishna, but very happy, very, very happy indeed. So anyone, all of you, all of us, we can experience that. That is very wonderful. If we just try to please Krishna very nicely and gradually work on molding our lives more and more in this way for Krishna's pleasure, and gradually, gradually giving up that deep-rooted concern for me. What's best for me? What's in it for me? Like this. This is purification. This is advancement in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. I don't know if we have any questions or comments to that sheet. Oops, okay, sorry. Okay. Let us see what we have. Following, if one follows Krishna consciousness, one delivers 7 generations of your family before or after you. What about the present? Does either family member, spouse, deliver their immediate family? Do you get the idea? It is said that in Krishna, that if you become a devotee, particularly if you become a pure devotee, then so many generations, even it's said 21 in fact, before and after, They may be liberated through no effort of their own, simply because of you becoming a pure devotee. So, if this applies to generations in the past and in the future, the question is, does it apply to now, your family now? The answer is yes, of course it does. But don't stand there looking at your atheistic family member thinking, okay, when is this person going to just start dancing in ecstasy? And is it going to be, hey, it's been 5 minutes. What happened? They haven't started chanting yet. Don't expect. It may not be on the spot, but it will happen. It will happen in due course of time. So even if your atheistic family members, even if in this whole lifetime maybe, they don't become devotees. But don't become discouraged and think that it's not true. It is true. But it just may be a question of some time. Although, you know, in so many cases we see that one member of the family becomes a devotee. A little later, another member does. A little later, another member does. And before you know, I've seen in our devotional community, we have these whole networks of families who are devotees. It's amazing. You meet someone and then someone else comes walking up and you see that those people are related, but you didn't know that other person's a devotee you met some other time, but actually they're related now to this person. So it tends to spread like that, and it tends to happen that gradually so many family members eventually become devotees. When one is trying to be tolerant to others and others instigate that person, what does one do? What, are you suggesting anything other than continuing to be tolerant? I'm not aware of there being another principle which is worthwhile. You know, it is not that you should try to be tolerant to others as long as they're not trying to instigate you. They might do something to irritate you, but not deliberately, so you tolerate that. But if they do something deliberately to you, then you don't have to be tolerant. Then you can just give them a quick what happened and just sort them right out. And then that's fine. No, it's not fine. No, Lord Chaitanya said, Trinada pisa nichena, Torora pisa hishnuna, Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. So, tolerant, like the straw in the street. Everyone's walking on the straw in the street, no one cares. But does the straw get up and say, hey, what are you doing here? How dare you? Oh, he just lies there. And the next person walks on him. Tolerant like a tree. That while the tree is being cut down, the tree shades the person who's cutting so he doesn't get hot, and provides some fruit so he feels refreshed, so he can cut even better. So, isn't that quite something? Yeah. So we have to practice like that. And the thing is, if you're trying to be tolerant, that's good. Someone tries to instigate you. So how should you see that? How should you understand that? Basically, you should see, Krishna is testing me. Yes. Krishna has just appeared via this person to put the squeeze on me to see, what are you really like? When everything's going okay, then you may be nice, happy days, Hare Krishna. But when the going gets tough, then what are you going to really do? Yeah. Like Prabhupada said, there was a war between India and Pakistan very briefly, quite some years ago. And one reporter asked Prabhupada, what would you think if the Pakistanis dropped a bomb on you? He wanted Prabhupada to say something like, oh, I'd think, oh, these Pakistanis are very bad, something like that. But Srila Prabhupada said that if the devotee sees, here comes a bomb to land on my head, Srila Prabhupada said, the devotee will think, here comes Krishna in the form of the bomb, coming to take me to him. Yes. So if you get instigated, harassed, then just understand, this is a special test from Krishna. So how am I going to deal with it? Krishna wants to see that, actually. So therefore let me be careful. My question is, explain the twin deities in this temple. There you see Lord Chaitanya on your right and Lord Nityananda on your left. They are the two most recent incarnations of Krishna, in the case of Lord Chaitanya on your right, and Lord Balaram, in the case of Lord Nityananda on your left. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya, and so on, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam. He appears from time to time, if there's deterioration spiritually like that. So the most recent incarnation of Krishna and his brother Balaram, they are Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. They appeared 500 years ago in Bengal to establish the Yuga Dharma, the prescribed process for God realization in this age, which is to chant the holy names of the Lord. Particularly, although not exclusively, but particularly the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So the deities are there. And the Lord agrees to accept that deity form. so we can approach him in that deity form and learn how to serve him in very personal terms in that deity form. He's not just some distant figure who we are serving, but, you know, it may not be so clear who he is. No, he's here. You can see him standing in front of you. You can offer directly to him. So the Lord accepts the deity form, and we accept the deity as being directly Krishna, not just a representation, not like that. What is the significance of devotee women having long hair and keeping their heads covered? This could be a little controversial, couldn't it? We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings if they don't have long hair and their heads are not covered. But I can tell you that there's a tradition, not just a tradition, there is a fact that we are prone to identify with these bodies. And we need to become free from that. So in order to do that, we are careful not to become extravagant in bodily matters. Our dress should not be extravagant, because if it's extravagant, then it encourages bodily consciousness. That doesn't mean we need to live in rags, but not extravagant is the basic point. And not overly decorated, because again, identifying with the body. And the hair, of course, is one part of the body which people are very fond of. You can do all sorts of things with your hair. Color it. Make it go up. Make it go sideways. Make it kind of frizzy or something, isn't it? Many different things. And in these ways, you reinforce your bodily consciousness. Look at my hair. Look at my body. Look at me. But I am not this body. So therefore, the men are encouraged. Actually, they're encouraged ultimately to shave their heads. That's a fact. Or at least keep their hair very short if they feel they need hair for like business or work purposes. And in the case of women, they are also allowed to shave their heads if they like. But we don't insist. But generally, traditionally the practice is that women, in order to avoid getting into this whole hair thing, but without perhaps undergoing the austerity, more extreme austerity of shaving the head, but they can just tie it back, keep it out of the way, like that. That's all. Keep it out of the way. It is not meant to be an item of decoration, in other words. It's just tied back out of the way in a sort of responsible type of way. Then the head is covered. That is a sign of chastity on the part of a lady, not displaying herself, making some sort of exhibition of herself like that. You know, this propensity that traditionally it's more associated with women, but men also have it, this propensity to decorate the body, fashion, and all these things. It is, in fact, degrading, really. It's degrading to exhibit yourself. Yeah, as, you know, particularly if one is exhibiting oneself as a sexual object, to be sort of explicit. This is demeaning, actually, to oneself, if one feels that one needs to do that. So these are some ideas on that subject, and we hope nobody got offended by that. Oh boy, this is an interesting one. If devotees are staunch vegetarians, why are some initiated devotees wearing lipstick? Which is deviously, is it? Or obviously? Obviously. Meant to incite lusty desires and is non-vegetarian, is it? Well, I don't know a lot about lipstick myself, so I don't know whether it's vegetarian or not, or how it works, really. But it's a fact. You know, let's face it, these bodies are a bit crummy, really. And particularly as you get into middle age and, you know, times like this, I mean, gosh. You don't want to become one of these people who every few years they have another facelift. Till they're finally lifted, you know, the whole face has come up to the head practically. Then it all starts sagging back. The body starts melting. Okay, so anyone wearing lipstick? Well, you know what? In East Europe, definitely in some cases, the ladies will not be given initiation if they still wear makeup. Because it's taken as being, you know, a sign that they're not really detached from the bodily concept sufficiently, other than if they need it for their work. Yeah. So, it's a point for consideration. And, you know, if you have a crummy body, that's just too bad. It may be good for you. It may be good for you, spiritually. At least you're not going to stand in front of the mirror posing and being attracted to yourself and Hare Krishna. What is the difference between destiny and karma? Well, they are the same thing. Two words for the same thing. I see. Well, there's one question here. Basically, the idea is that we are meant to chant to create new impressions on the mind. Is it also necessarily to consciously tackle the old mental impressions, to alter them? Well, that's a very good question. If you see them coming up and interfering with your Krishna consciousness, then yes. Otherwise, generally, we should try and serve Krishna nicely and chant nicely, and all those old impressions will just dissolve in due course of time. But if you see any of them coming up and prominently trying to influence you, then yes, you have to stand up and try and deal with them. When we sleep, does our soul leave our body? Generally not. Generally not. Your subtle body may leave your gross body, means your mental body may leave the physical body. That is what dreams may be. You may actually go to those places that you dream of. Yes, in your subtle body. But then, at some point, the subtle body comes back. It's sort of inextricably linked up with the gross body, so you can't actually really just go away altogether like that. But the soul remains in the body. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for listening very patiently. And now we will have a little kirtan for a while, then we'll serve prasadam. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.